when you need to talk technology. No one gets you more gigs in your hard drive than Adam. It's time for Adam the Computer Guy with Adam Lepp.
The coffee is all made. I've had a few sips to start the morning. And I thank you very much for tuning in to The Talking Place, WWGH Radio. Adam Lepp here, the computer guy, with the Tuesday morning edition. Just a week before income taxes are due. It's the 10th of April. Rather wintry yesterday and a little warmer today. We'll have temperatures in the 70s, though, by later in the week. So I certainly enjoy the weather here in the great Buckeye State. Yesterday, the interviewer to the stars, Scott Spears, had Pat Robertson on, someone he's been wanting to have as a guest on his show for a long time. Now, I certainly wouldn't say that I'm a fan of Mr. Robertson, but we enjoy hearing all viewpoints from the left, the right, and people like myself who are kind of all over the place. That's a great thing about talk radio. Dialogue, opinions, agree, disagree. Please post to our Facebook, tweet myself at NetQB or at Scott Spears Ohio on Twitter, just like the president does, with your opinions and maybe some suggestions about future guests. Some very exclusive content here on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio. Of course, Scott's got some more great guests lined up for later today, so please keep your listening device, radio or virtual listening device, online right where it is for that unique opportunity to hear the shows we broadcast on this station of bigly fabulousness. I guess that's a word. Well, it's okay. I can make up words if I feel like it. As I said, perspectives vary, sometimes one extreme or the other, with respect to our guests. A regular guest of mine, and he's on with Scott a lot also, Dr. Ron Fineman, is on next hour to talk about politics and current events, things happening in the great world around us. We're also going to talk about history, not just as a career, but when you learn about it in school, is it valuable? As you probably know, I was a chemistry major and have never really been big on humanities. But as I've gotten older, I have changed my opinion, and I now feel that learning about humanities is important. You don't have to know every battle of the Civil War, every general, every nuance, like someone who would be going into history or government as a career, like Dr. Fineman, who's been a professor for a long time, an author, well-respected historian and scholar. But having an idea of what's happened in the world and what happens today is important. Regardless of your field, you become a more well-rounded person. Plus, I believe the thinking process involved in learning about history and things that may not be related directly to your field or career or life will help you make better decisions and will exercise the brain. Exercise the body, exercise the brain. It will keep you young and viable and a better member of society and a better person. So we're gonna talk about that, because someone had posted that history was not a useful line of study if you don't go into it as a line of work. And Dr. Fineman had a quick debate with that person, and I put in my 2 cents worth. So we'll talk about that on the show next hour, as well as current events, things going on with President Trump, presidential candidates, and who knows what else. The show is called A Finer Mid-Morning Coffee Break with Adam and the Professor, coming up next hour. So, not one to shy away from promoting other shows on this station, but of course, this particular show, it is called the Adam the Computer Guy radio show. As you heard the announcer and his dulcet tones explain earlier, a lot going on in the IT world, and the big story does relate to politics and the world around us, as I see it. Privacy on Facebook, Facebook scanning your messenger messages, Facebook collecting data, and Facebook not being overly honest about what it does and what it has done. And their main founder, Mark Zuckerberg, who's only 33 years old. He, of course, is a multi-zillionaire. He did go to Harvard and kind of decided that running Facebook would make more money and be more productive. And again, I think an education from Harvard, you can't get much better than that. But I think he took at that point, made a very good decision to go ahead and stop going to college and concentrate on Facebook, as that platform certainly has changed the world. We use it here at the station a lot. It's our main way of communicating. But the problem is they are, as I said, copying, attaching, etc., sneaking around to find out about you and not totally being honest about it. And could Zuckerberg be in hot water? Could he possibly find himself in prison? Well, we shall see. Article this morning in USA Today starts by saying Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg will try to reassure a skeptical Congress this week that his company can protect Americans' privacy and thwart foreign election meddling in the wake of a data breach that has affected up to 87 million users and severely damaged the reputation of the social media empire. And Facebook is certainly an empire bigger than a lot of countries. Even if you don't use it, you don't like it, it's still around us every day and has influenced other methods of social networking, Twitter, obviously, Instagram, which is owned by Facebook, Snapchat, you name it. It has a large rippling domino mushroom effect, whatever you want to call it. Mark Zuckerberg was the main force behind the beginning of Facebook in only 2004, 14 years ago. It's amazing how much has occurred in that time frame. According to the article in USA Today, he's facing his toughest political test yet as he testifies before Congress later today and on Wednesday. This is a very up-to-the-minute story. And I would say by the end of the day, there will be an update, but, you know, my show will be over at 10 a.m., so please do follow the news, and I'll talk more about it on Thursday and next week. Now, Mark Zuckerberg is trying to fend off government regulation and restore public confidence in after recent revelations that data from millions of Facebook users was shared with Cambridge Analytica, which was a data mining firm used by the Trump campaign in the 2016 election. This data was shared without the knowledge of the affected users. We may want to call them victims. And Facebook began notifying these people yesterday. Now, yesterday, Mark Zuckerberg began his talk on Capitol Hill, meeting with lawmakers in advance of his testimony. And at the same time, Facebook stock was falling, which means that Zuckerberg's net worth is falling. Now, he's still a multi-zillionaire, but not quite as much as he was last week at this time. Senator Bill Nelson of Florida, the senior Democrat on the committee on the Commerce, Science, and Transportation Committee, met privately with Mark Zuckerberg for about an hour. I would have liked to have been a spot of dust on the wall during that meeting. It certainly would have been intriguing. He said if we don't rein in the misuse of social media, none of us are going to have any privacy anymore. And I would agree. Again, this is Senator Bill Nelson of Florida, the senior Democrat on the committee that Mark Zuckerberg is testifying in front of later today and tomorrow. Senator Nelson said, "My sense is that Zuckerberg takes this seriously because he knows there is going to be a hard look at regulation. If it's not his site, then someone else's can be misused by people who are trying to do us harm. I believe he understands that regulation could be right around the corner." Zuckerberg will testify later today, before a joint hearing of the Senate Commerce, Science, and Transportation Committee and the Senate Judiciary Committee. He will testify again tomorrow morning before the House Energy and Commerce Committee. In written testimony released yesterday, Mark Zuckerberg apologized for the privacy breach. Well, his apology probably isn't enough. I think there's a lot more going on here. He also apologized for failing to recognize that Kremlin-linked groups were posting political ads and fake news on Facebook during the last presidential election. Zuckerberg said the social media platform is now taking steps to limit access to customers' data. Mark Zuckerberg says in his written testimony, quote, "We didn't take a broad enough view of our responsibility, and that was a big mistake. It was my mistake, and I'm sorry. I started Facebook, I run it, and I'm responsible for what happens here." Now, the Cambridge Analytica scandal follows last fall's revelations that Russian companies spent $100,000 on 3,000 ads before, during, and after the 2016 election to try to slow division among U.S. voters on hot-button issues for the big ones, immigration, gay rights, race, and religion. Pretty controversial, I would say. Now, Mark Zuckerberg initially scoffed at suggestions that Russians exploited his platform, but later apologized after discovering the ads. Well, he is still responsible, I would agree. You know, it's nice that he apologized, but there's a lot more that's applicable here. Mark Zuckerberg said in his written testimony, "Facebook is an idealistic and optimistic company. For most of our existence, we focused on all the good that connecting people can bring. But it's clear now that we didn't do enough to prevent those tools from being used for harm as well." Now, the Congress, which is a Republican majority, is generally opposed to increased government regulation of businesses. But this high-profile revelation of Russian meddling and privacy breaches at Facebook is putting pressure on lawmakers to do something. Again, we need some regulation. I'm not in favor of heavy regulation either, but there are certain things we need to regulate. We talk about net neutrality. That's a biggie. Something else that we need to get involved with through the government. And this here, the Facebook privacy, another example. Senator John Kennedy, a Louisiana Republican, said, "I don't want to hurt Facebook. I don't want to regulate them half to death. But we have a problem." He serves on the Judiciary Committee. He said that on Face the Nation, a program on CBS on Sunday. He said, "My biggest worry with all this is that the privacy issue and what I call the propagandist issue are both too big for Facebook to fix. And that's the frightening part." Last Friday, Mark Zuckerberg announced that Facebook will support a bipartisan bill by Democratic Senators Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota and Mark Warner of Virginia and well-known Republican, former presidential candidate John McCain of Arizona that would require social media companies to publicly disclose who is paying for political ads. That's a regulation which already applies to traditional media companies like newspapers, radio, and TV. So Facebook, being a new kind of media company, they were exempt from these regulations. But a bill is going to change that. And Scott Spears and I have talked about Facebook. Is it a news agency? Well, I think this pretty much shows that it is. Different kind than one with reporters and investigative reporters, but certainly they're in the news business and they're taking political ads. Now, the Honest Ads Act is a relatively modest proposal that stops short of much harsher possible regulations that could affect the company's bottom line. Amy Klobuchar, again, Democratic senator from Minnesota, She's thought of as a possible presidential contender. Dr. Feynman and I talk about her often. Anyway, she said social media companies need to protect their users' info, personal info, and we need everyone who sells political advertisements to be held to the same standards. So Mark Zuckerberg, in testimony that he will deliver to the House committee, said, quote, Facebook should have spotted Russian interference earlier. To prevent future meddling by foreign governments, Facebook has built more effective artificial intelligence tools to remove fake accounts. He said this improved technology helped Facebook find and remove 30,000 fake accounts during last year's election in France. The new tools also helped detect and remove fake accounts created in Macedonia, aimed at spreading false information during the special Senate election last December in Alabama. Now, over the next couple days, Zuckerberg will have to answer hours of tough questions from lawmakers, many of whom will be trying to make their mark at the high-profile sessions. So not an easy couple days for Mr. Zuckerberg. Certainly, I will be watching the news and finding updates and things to talk about, and also my own curiosity. As like almost everybody else, I use Facebook a lot. The station uses it a lot, and I think we need to know what's going on. This is quite serious. So, anyway, according to Congressman Nelson, just because Zuckerberg thinks he's fixing the problems at Facebook doesn't mean Congress will agree. He thinks he's taking action, and has in the past, but I think there's going to be a lot more action that's going to have to take place. Again, Senator Bill Nelson from Florida. Interesting few days ahead for Facebook, and we're following this story. We encourage you to watch the news, keep an eye on what's happening, and whether or not you are a regular user of Facebook through your personal life, your business, where you work, etc., or you're not, or you don't totally dislike Facebook. It's around us, and it affects everybody. And I think we, as Americans, need to know exactly what's going on here. Another Facebook story is about Facebook Messenger. Do they or do they not scan all of your personal chats? Hold on a second here. Oh, this coffee is fantastic. I want to thank the intern for doing such a wonderful job making this delicious Java. Makes a morning show like this so much more fun. Anyway, hats off to our staff. Always appreciated. You may have heard about Facebook Messenger, something that I use a lot. We use the station to communicate. Well, do they snoop on what you're saying? Do they take what you're saying in your messages and use it, copy it to provide ads or who knows what, to listen to people talk, to argue, and maybe giggle about it? Anyway, Facebook CEO, and this is from an article in Newsweek, Mark Zuckerberg, he's confirmed that the Facebook website, and again, if you use the website, the chat, or the app, I probably use it on the computer more, but anyway, regardless of how you do it, that they have systems in place to scan personal chats automatically via the Messenger app. And this, of course, has been related to fears that the social media giant has the ability to snoop on the secrets of its users. Now, like with any online chat and email service, Facebook uses automated technology that can search for malware, search for illegal things like child abuse. But are they taking that too far? They scan all images and links sent via Messenger. And if their algorithms flag this link, this photo, the moderation team will read the chat, according to Bloomberg. A Facebook spokesperson said that these automated tools were designed to, quote, rapidly stop abusive behavior. On Messenger, when you send a photo, our automated systems scan it using photo matching technology to detect known child exploitation imagery, or when you send a link, we scan it for malware and viruses. But are they doing a little too much scanning? Do they have ulterior motives? Well, I would say they do. And again, with the testimony in front of Congress with Mark Zuckerberg today and tomorrow, not a very good week for Facebook. Anyway, Facebook stressed, but are they being truthful? I don't think they are. Well, what they stressed is that they don't use the content of chats for advertising. The Messenger app has the option for encryption, but is switched off by default. WhatsApp, which is owned by Facebook, comes bundled with end-to-end encryption as standard, meaning messages are kept secure between sender and receiver. In an article interview published by Vox yesterday, Mark Zuckerberg talked about it, talked about the chat snooping process. He confirmed experts from Facebook were able to stop, quote, sensational messages being sent that related to conflict in Myanmar. That's the place spelled M-Y-A-N-M-A-R. I've heard different pronunciations, so I want to be sure we know what we're talking about. He said people were trying to use our tools in order to incite real harm. Now, in that case, our systems detect that that's going on. We stop those messages from going through. But this is certainly something that we're paying a lot of attention to. One piece of technology that the Facebook platform uses is called Photo DNA. Now, this was created along with Microsoft. So Microsoft being one of the creators of this Photo DNA. And what it can do is it takes a look at the photo and decides, well, what may be in that picture without, of course, having a human look at everything, and that would take forever. Anyway, this Photo DNA, co-created by Microsoft, can proactively detect child abuse material and stop it from being uploaded. In some cases, Facebook said it can be used to curb the spread of revenge porn. Now, this admittance came as executives from Facebook were facing tough questions over their data protection and privacy policies in the wake of the Cambridge Analytical scandal involving the alleged abuse of roughly 87 million accounts. Yeah, that's a lot of accounts, about a quarter of the population of the United States. Last Wednesday, Facebook confirmed that all users potentially had their data scraped. Now, this email scanning function has similarities to technology used by Google, which we've talked about in the past, where it searches Gmail, a very large email service provided by Google, for suspicious material. Now, last year, Google changed its terms so that it would no longer tailor the findings for advertising purposes. So they would look at your mail and determine, well, this person gets email from a car dealer. He's looking to buy a new car. We'll have an ad for a car dealer in his feed or somewhere within easy view, because this person obviously would find that ad to be of interest. Well, that's interesting from a business standpoint, but very Snoopy. It's like my opinion. No offense to the dog Snoopy, just it's snooping, and it's being nosy, and it's a privacy invasion. Anyway, last year, though, Google did the right thing. They changed their terms so that they would no longer tailor the findings, that is what they find by scanning Gmail, for advertising purposes, but they acknowledged but they'd still keep a watchful eye over chats to stop malware and illegal content. So Google doing the right thing. Now, last Friday, Facebook, again, according to an article in Newsweek, was thrown headfirst into another scandal after TechCrunch revealed old chats sent by Zuckerberg had been purged from their inboxes. Sounds a bit like these private email server scandals, or even a little bit like Watergate. Anyway, Facebook said in a statement they were purged for security reasons. Again, sounds like Watergate to me. Anyway, A spokesperson told TechCrunch, after Sony Pictures' emails were hacked in 2014, we made a number of changes to protect our executives' communications. These included limiting the retention period for marked messages in Messenger. We did it so in full compliance with our legal obligations to preserve messages. So, a lot of stuff going on at Facebook. We invite you to listen to your news, read your news websites, or pick up the old-fashioned newspaper. And I think later today there'll be some updates. And we cover that here on the Adam the Computer Guy radio show, all about technology, news, and views. And spent a lot of time in this story today as I feel it is very important. Facebook has a large impact on the world around us, whether or not you use it. You use it a lot here at the station. And I think we need to know what they're doing with your posts and your data. And it sounds like a lot more than we thought they were a year ago. Adam Lepp here, the Computer Guy. Thank you for listening to The Talking Place. And this show, the Adam the Computer Guy radio show, WWGH1071.com. As you probably know, Intel is the main manufacturer of processors for computers. And like anything in technology, they seem to get faster and smarter every day. It's kind of amazing how many instructions per second these tiny little processors can process. Well, recently, Intel unveiled its latest family of 8th generation Core processors. Ray Wang from Constellation Research said this is the big Intel refresh that folks have been talking about. As with previous new generation Core launches, these initial solutions are aimed at customers who value high-end performance and dynamic market segments. Comes from Charles King, a frequent person we quote here. He's from Pundit. He said, I expect business-specific PCs and value-oriented systems will come along in relatively short order. Now, these 8th-generation Core processors incorporate Intel Octane memory, a smart and adaptable system accelerator for desktop and mobile platforms using SATA-based storage technology. Same kind of storage that's used for hard drives. Anyway, Intel also has released a new data drive acceleration feature that boosts a large secondary hard disk drive. So what does that mean? Well, the Intel Octane and data drive acceleration provide up to 4.7 times the game loading speed and 1.7 times the faster media loading. Kevin Kruel from Tyrios Research said most of the performance improvements come from system acceleration using Octane memory and improved chipset networking. These are parts to fill in market gaps in the product line. Now, this new processor, the i9, we have the i3, i5, i7, this is the i9-8950HK. Sounds fancy, but it is. It has 6 cores and 12 threads. Pretty good. You could have up to 4.8 gigahertz. And current processors, again, go about as high as 4 gigahertz. And that refers to the number of instructions processed per second. In this case, 4.8 billion in 1 second. Pretty fast. Now, the new i5, i7, and i9 processors are based on what Intel calls Coffee Lake, essentially for gameplay. If you're a gamer, this will be of interest. Up to 41% more frames per second. And for video, 4K video, up to 59% faster than the previous generation. So some pretty fancy stuff. The H series mobile processors have done a great job driving the power envelope down to 45 watts, which improves battery life and overall performance. So they're using less power, providing better performance. Now, the vPro processors span the Intel Core processor and the Intel Xeon processor families. Up to 20% faster modeling for people doing the 3D modeling. For example, CAD-type programs where you're taking a look at what something looks like in 3D, be it a building or bridge or even your pet or yourself. These include hardware-based Intel Authenticate multi-factor authentication solution, which supports facial recognition in Windows 10. It'll be available from Dell, HP, and Lenovo. Lenovo's and HP's Intel vPro-based PCs will include Intel Runtime BIOS Resilience, which locks the BIOS, the basic input-output system that's kind of behind the computer's functioning. It'll lock it when software is running. So, a lot of fancy stuff here, and again, not just mumbo-jumbo. These processors are getting very fast and smart and using less power. Rob Enderle, we quote him often, he said, Intel can deliver on CPU functionality, which has dropped in performance, but still lags on graphic processor units, GPUs, and modems. Much of the performance these days is gated by the modem and the GPU, not the CPU. That, again, the graphics processor, not the central processor, which just isn't as important as it once was. Developers may not benefit much from the new processors because with IDF shut down, Intel's developer efforts are largely moot. So, is this new and fancy processor something which will become popular? Well, I would say it will be. Using less power in mobile processors and desktop processors, improved facial recognition, faster graphics for gaming, and faster 3D modeling. So Intel doing a lot of good stuff with their fancy-dancy new processors and making things faster and efficient, and who knows what they'll be doing this time next year. Of course, we'll be talking about it here on the Adam the Computer Guy radio show, news and views from the great world of technology. So we talked about Intel. Let's talk about another company which is always in the news and one frequently mentioned on this show, Apple and the iPhone. Well, there may be a gesture control and a curved body, something which is offered on some Android phones, in future iPhones. Bloomberg reported that Apple has been experimenting with those features for the iPhone, and they could be ready for prime time in 2 to 3 years. Gesture control lets a user execute tasks without touching the screen. Tuong Nguyen from Gartner said the technology could be used for more than just answering phone calls and opening apps. It could be used to enlarge the user experience. It could be folded into an umbrella of multimodal user experiences. Understanding what you want through a gesture, a touch, voice, or a biometric. Gesture will be a bigger play than just ignoring a phone call with a wave of your hand. David McQueen from ABI Research said, "The mobile industry is looking at innovative user interfaces to breathe new life into the market, and gesture control can be a part of that. Many new interfaces will develop where voice, artificial intelligence, mixed reality, augmented reality, and gesture experiences will all come to the forefront. Gesture control can have other applications." Kevin Cruel with Turios Research said, "It's good when you're wearing gloves or your hands are dirty. I expect this to be a cool demo feature, but not something people will use all the time." Ramon Llamas said, he's from IDC, another guy we quote often, said, "Gesture controls don't make anything necessarily easier. The easiest and most natural user interface is the one where you don't have to use touch or gestures at all. That's using your voice. I just haven't seen anything from the gesture side of things that says users want to do this." As we talked about a curved display is nothing new. Samsung's latest Galaxies, the S9, S9 Plus have them, and the iPhone X, or maybe it's the iPhone 10, that's the one that can cost up to $999, so I say the X stands for expensive, it has a slight curve at the bottom. But it appears that Apple has been experimenting with curving the display gradually from top to bottom. Samsung curves its displays at the edges. Now, the use of a display, the OLED display, gives phone makers the ability to bend the screens in their devices. The ability to bend the display allows for a more flexible design for the phone, according to Kevin Kruel from Terios Research. He said, I expect this will allow for a more comfortable and organic shape in the hand. That said, the merits of curved screens don't seem to have captured a lot of interest. Curved screens have been tried before in smartphones and TVs, and they don't seem to have had much resonance with consumers. I think it would be risky to adopt curved screens into Apple's portfolio unless it is implemented in a way that hasn't been seen before and is more subtle than previous attempts, which is what Apple does best. That comes from David McQueen at ABI Research. Garrett Schneeman from IHS Market said, when Samsung began curving displays, it did so with an eye to altering the interface of its devices. At this point, the curve is just a design aesthetic. There's nothing enabled by it. If Apple were to add curves to the iPhone's figure, it would be tardy to the party. But that's never been a problem for the company in the past. Apple will surprise you. Maybe they'll bring it in late, but they will likely bring in something new, interesting, and valuable to the consumer. Andreas Scherer from Salto Partners said, in a smartphone market where differentiation among flagship phones has become increasingly difficult, incremental technologies like gesture control and curved displays could help separate iPhone from the pack. But the big question is, how much is the market actually willing to pay for incremental improvements that may or may not have significantly impacting the overall user experience? Again, the almighty dollar. Well, he said, Apple has adopted a high price strategy from the very inception of the iPhone. It's unclear if these capabilities will help justify Apple's premium in the future. So we shall see. Apple offering some things that are available to an extent in Android phones. Adam Lepp here, the Computer Guy. Thank you for listening. News and views from the world of technology. Twice a week, Tuesday and Thursdays at 9:13 a.m. on WWGH, the Adam the Computer Guy radio show.
If I knew you were coming, I'd bake the cake.
Adam Lepp!
Do you live in a smart home? Well, what is a smart home? If you have devices that you can control with your smartphone or possibly control themselves based upon the time of day, how light it is outside, or some other method that would be more higher tech than what grandma and grandpa used to do. Statistically, 41% of people who responded to an online survey conducted last year said they already owned smart home devices. Again, people responding to the online survey are more likely to have smart home items, but 41% is pretty good. So of these people who replied, 48% of respondents managed their smart home gadgets through an app rather than a wall-mounted terminal or tablet. 20% had connected appliances, 16% had smart thermostats, 12% smart security devices, and 10% smart lighting. I do have in my bedroom lights that I can turn off and on with my phone or dim. Not super high tech, but kind of cool nonetheless, and not overly expensive. It's a pain to turn the light off when I can just do it right from my phone, and that's kind of cool. Plus, you can do it remotely. So I'm getting into the swing of things, but many times I kind of prefer the old-fashioned method. There certainly are pros and cons for both. Plus, the internet has to be working. The electricity has to be working. So there are some technical limitations, but I think in general the advantages outweigh that. So smart refrigerators and washing machines. Sales doubled last year. They mainly use Wi-Fi for connectivity. Now, my washing machine and my refrigerator are not smart, but they're pretty good nonetheless. Shipments of voice-controlled devices like the Amazon Echo and Google Home rose 159% in 2017 versus 2016. We were kind of telling Amazon Echo or Google Home to do something. And in case of a washing machine, maybe tell it how to wash your clothing, or maybe to use your phone to tell it to stop or to do an extra rinse cycle. Mine doesn't do that, but maybe my next washing machine will. Jonathan Collins, research director at ABI, said, "It is the platforms behind these devices that are part of a long-term plan to capture an increasingly valuable smart home data stream, one that provides not just detailed insights into the homes they are in, but will also be the foundation for a new generation of valuable and integrated services." Nearly 40% of U.S. interactive security systems dealers who participated in recent research by Parks Associates reported that half or more of their sales included a smart home device. Nearly half of the dealers who were not offering interactive systems said they planned to do so within 12 months. So the bottom line is, you should expect to see more and more smart home devices that communicate with each other using Wi-Fi, as well as connecting externally to the internet. So, counterpoint, we bring up the question that I mentioned earlier. What happens when a connection to the internet is down? AWS experienced several recent outages. The latest one occurred in March. And when that happened, Alexa voice controls for many consumers stopped working. Google servers have also gone down on occasion, and distributed denial of service attacks, hacking attacks, trying to flood the usage of these devices and the bandwidth so that they stop working. They have from time to time cut off internet service. AWS, which I believe stands for Amazon Web Services, is the engine behind the Alexa voice devices, which of course are part of Amazon. Felipe Oliveira from Future Source Consulting said, "The impact of the loss of internet connection would vary greatly from one area of the smart home to the next. The impact also would depend on specific features of the device." He said a smart lock that only works via Wi-Fi would lock the house during downtime, but most smart locks would be installed in addition to the existing manual lock. So you can always do it the old-fashioned way with a key or with a numerical combination. But the Wi-Fi is kind of cool. You can take your phone and tell it to unlock the lock as long as the internet is working. Now, Wi-Fi downtime would not stop devices from fulfilling their primary functions. For example, you'd still use your smart washer like a non-smart washer, but the remote voice commands would not work. So it's not the end of the world if you are not able to tell your washer additional rinse cycle, but it'd be kind of nice, but it would still work like a non-smart washer. So there certainly is a backup in place. Security would be the most affected part of the smart home. Live feeds from connected security cameras would stop during downtime, but in the case of security cameras with internal storage and battery backup. Video would continue to be recorded and stored. So there's a pretty good plan in place because internet does go down from time to time. Tom Kerber, director of Internet of Things Strategy at Parks, said, that's a company, not just like a state park. Anyway, he's an expert, and he said homeowners should have systems in place that help maintain connectivity. And I agree. Get a battery backup. That's the most obvious one. Security and other critical systems have redundancies like battery backups and backup cellular connections, which allow them to work when power or connectivity is lost. The number of smart devices that can be installed by the homeowner is growing. And, of course, do-it-yourself devices will increase the potential for problems. He said the average consumer has the expectation that these devices will work as planned. And, of course, people like me know that isn't always the case. As a result, many do not do any additional preparation for the event that the device loses internet connectivity. Do not purchase and install a device where lack of internet connection would leave you as a user worse off than by using a non-connected device. Make sure you know how to operate smart devices manually, how to use the smart washing machine when it decides not to be smart. Maybe trickier than the kind your grandma has. The controls may be a little different, but learn how to use them. Homeowners installing do-it-yourself devices should ensure there are battery and cellular connection backups. Also, consumers are advised to select home network routers with support systems that monitor and optimize the home network to maintain strong device connections. Rob Enderle, there's an expert we quote often because he knows a lot. A very smart dude, for sure. He said, make sure you know how to operate your Internet of Things devices in case of a power or network failure and communicate the backup plan with the family so they don't drive you nuts if there's an outage while you're at work. Have an uninterruptible power supply, UPS system connected to critical systems in case of electrical outages. Make sure you know where to find the keys to your smart locks in case they fail. Put all related manuals and unique tools in one place so you can find them if you need to get to your Internet of Things stuff working again or need to work around it. Make sure every smart device has some sort of a manual backup control and have more than one way to get to the intelligent agent controlling the smart home or device. Have both a local device and a smartphone app. So good suggestions from the experts. If you have a smart home, understand sometimes internet becomes unavailable or there are other technical problems. Have a backup plan. Adam Lepp here with the Adam the Computer Guy radio show. Advice, suggestions, perspectives, and other tidbits from the world of technology on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio.